From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Justice Department released details of the case against two Romanians who allegedly hacked computers tied to the Washington, D.C. police surveillance cameras. Police in Bucharest arrested the two on December 15th. U.S. attorneys have charged them with conspiracy to commit computer and wire fraud. Justice Department said the investigation was of the highest priority because the alleged hacking of the surveillance cameras and the computers came just weeks before the inauguration of President Trump. Evidence has not pointed to any one individual being affected by the hacking. Former soccer star George Weah has been declared the winner of Liberia's presidential election. Weah ran against Vice President Joseph Boakai, the Unity Party candidate, to replace President Erlen Jensen Sirleaf, who was stepping down after two terms. Jerome Kokoya is Liberia's Electoral Commission chairman.
The CDC is 61.5% for the CDC and 38.5% for the Unity Party.
Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, or the CDC, favored going into the voting. If all goes smoothly, Liberia will see its first peaceful and democratic transfer of power in more than 70 years. United States has announced full visa services for Turkish citizens wishing to travel to the U.S. will resume and said it received assurances Ankara would inform Washington before moving to detain or arrest any embassy employees. The U.S. had suspended all non-immigrant visa services in Turkey earlier this year in response to the arrests of a U.S. consulate employee in Istanbul on terrorism charges. This is VOA News. Jan Egelin, the special advisor to the U.N. special envoy to Syria, says he fears Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is bargaining with children's lives in a deal to evacuate critically ill patients, mainly children, from the besieged opposition-held town of eastern Ghouta on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. We get more now from Reuters' Lucy Fielder.
The evacuation of a handful of critically ill patients from eastern Ghouta, near the Syrian capital. A deal between Damascus and a rebel faction, which broke months of deadlock, allowed the Red Crescent to bring them out late on Tuesday. Eastern Ghouta is the last major rebel stronghold left near Damascus. Since 2013, nearly 400,000 people have been trapped there by the Syrian army, making it the country's biggest remaining siege. They're suffering the worst malnutrition of the almost seven-year war. The four evacuees were taken to hospitals in the nearby capital, Damascus. But a six-month-old baby girl died before she could be evacuated, the Syrian American Medical Society said. The United Nations has pleaded for the government to allow out about 500 patients, including children with cancer. Although eastern Ghouta is officially a de-escalation zone under ceasefire deals for rebel territory, fighting there continues.
Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. Eastern Ghouta has been besieged by Syrian regime forces and Shiite allies for more than 5 years, targeted daily by government warplanes as well as artillery. Two journalists and their local staff were released from a Myanmar prison today, 2 months after their arrest for allegedly flying a drone over the parliament. The journalists were working for the Turkish state broadcaster TRT when they were arrested on October the 27th. A court also dropped additional charges against them, their local interpreter, Ong Nain So, and their driver. Here's Ong Nain So.
So, like, everything is very unexpected. Until last night, on the way back from our court, we didn't know that we're gonna leave this morning. So everything is very amazing, very strange. And I still appreciate our authorities. And the reason why they released is like they are focusing on the diplomatic relationship of two countries, and also they didn't find from us, which is like any intention to break state security.
Rights and media groups have criticized the new civilian government led by Nobel Peace Laureate Aung San Suu Kyi for continuing to use colonial-era laws to threaten and imprison journalists. Get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com, and we're always available on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. And today's Friday, December 29th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. It is almost certain that football legend George Oppong Weah will be the next president of Liberia. This followed the announcement Thursday by the country's election commission of the first preliminary results in the December 26th presidential runoff election.
The overall percentage is CDC is 61.5% for the CDC and 38.5% for the United Party. Now,
Liberia's Elections Commission Chairman Jerome Kokoya. And in Malawi, the push for more female members of parliament has been dealt a blow. The government says it will not consider a proposal to create 28 automatic parliamentary seats for women. And a Cameroonian-born American Prize-winning author arrived in the U.S. after the Cameroonian government accused him of threatening the life of Cameroon President Paul Biya on social media.
Mr. Ngannou violated the law of our nation, threatened to kill the head of state, was detained just for investigation. But the head of state decided to stop the procedure and to let him go.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's Minister of Communication. He was speaking after court freed Patrice Ngannou. And the Somali government has retaken control of its airspace after more than two decades. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Liberia, where former soccer star George Weah has been declared the winner of the country's presidential election. Liberia's Electoral Commission said Thursday that Weah had won 61.5% of the total vote and won 14 out of Liberia's 15 counties. Weah ran against Vice President Joseph Boakai to replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who is stepping down after two terms, the maximum allowed under Liberia's constitution. VOA's James Batty is in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Good morning, James. What more can you tell us about the situation as the Electoral Commission prepares to give final tally of the results?
Good morning, Jackson, and good morning to all of our listeners around Africa. Liberia made history 12 years ago when it elected the first female president in Africa in the name of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Now, the country is on the verge of another historic accomplishment. According to Election Commission Chairman Kokoya, and with 98.1% of all polling places reporting, George Weah was either leading or has won all but one of Liberia's 15 counties. Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party was only leading in his home county of Lofa. Here is Election Commission Chair Kokoya with the announcement.
The total vote, CDC 720,023, the Unity Party 451,088. Invalid votes, 27,873. Total votes, 1,198,984. The overall percentage is CDC is 61.5% for the CDC and 38.5% for the United Party.
That was Liberia's Election Commission Chair, Mr. Kokoya. Now, James, what has been the reaction among the supporters of Mr. George Weah?
Jackson, as I drove home last night to my hotel, I saw the headquarters of George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change was a sea of people jubilating and dancing to the George Weah campaign music. The party was continuing into the wee hours of this Friday morning. Earlier in the day, on Thursday, in a hall, a very packed hall where the announcement was made by the Elections Commission Chair, I had a chance to speak with Nathaniel McGee, who is the National Chairman of George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC. I asked him for his reaction to the news that his candidate, George Weah, was on the verge of becoming Liberia's next president. And here is what he had to say.
Well, firstly, I want to say thank God for this day. It's been a very long journey. You see, we started some 6 years ago on this journey, on the second phase in 2017. Back in October, we saw all sorts of litigation, some of which we thought were not necessary. But as peace-loving people, we felt that the Democratic, the legal process must proceed, and our partisan remain calm, and we want to stay. Thanks to all Liberians who participated, whether you voted for the CDC or not, I think we need to come together as a people to build our country.
Is your party ready for the challenge?
If we were not ready, we'd not be in the race. The fact that we're going in the race, it shows that we are ready, and you'll see the difference. For us, our leaders always said, he's been tried and tested. When people thought he would not succeed, he did succeed.
You mentioned the many legal challenges. There was a lot of animosity during the first round campaign and even the runoff. How do you think the country can come together?
Well, we'll be very magnanimous in victory. We've always said we intend to do an inclusive government. And so it is our desire to see that we bring Liberians together, irrespective of the party they belong to. We'll even reach out to some members of the United Party to bring them. Individuals who have some good characters, who can serve their country, we'll reach out to them. So it's not about, it's just the CDC. We think it's a victory for the country.
That was Nathaniel McGee, who is the national chairman of George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change.
Now, James, I had some reports during rounds that at some point Mr. Joseph Boakai's team or his camp wanted to challenge the results. How did that go? Are we expecting any concession from him in the next few hours as the Electoral Commission prepares to announce the full results?
It's possible today, but soon after the announcement was made, the vice president had not conceded, at least to my knowledge. I was told last night, Thursday night, by a senior advisor to Vice President Joseph Boakai, that the vice president will likely call Senator George Weah probably later today to offer his congratulations and to concede. You mentioned about this rumor that was circulating soon after the Election Commission announced the preliminary results. And the rumor was that the ruling Unity Party had again challenged the, or was on the verge of, was planning to challenge the preliminary result that had just been announced. Remember, the ruling party was part of a four political party group that challenged the results of the October 10 election. But I talked with a senior advisor to the vice president, and he told me that the vice president knew nothing or had no interest in any court challenge at the moment.
Now, James, this marks the first time in 70 years that Liberia will witness a transfer of power from one elected president to another. What is the feeling among Liberians about this historic moment?
Well, let me say that talking to a lot of political insiders here, everyone seems to be very happy. Number one, the fact that the country has gone through this electoral process with so many legal challenges. And they point to the fact that all this indicates that the Liberian democracy is more and more maturing. And so now the challenge now is for every Liberian to rally behind their new president to move the country forward.
That's VOA's James Batty. He's covering the election from Monrovia. James Batty, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jackson.
The Burundi government says that 2017 has been marked with an improvement of security around the nation. However, opposition members say that the human rights situation in the country is still lacking. Moses Habyarimana has this story.
Burundi is a country that have been hit by the political crisis since 2015 after the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a third term in the office. According to the Burundi authorities, more than 500 people were killed and hundreds of thousands fled the country. As the year 2017 approaches to an end, Burundi Public Security Minister Alain Guillaume Bunyoni said that the security in the country improved significantly.
By instance, we can say that targeting some important types of crimes such as assassinations, which have decreased from 101 to 277. In terms of terrorist acts, it decreased from 134 to 11 only in this year of 2017.
Though the country is relatively gaining stability, 2017 was marked with a couple of developments in the country that included the attack of the UN human rights officers in Burundi. Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza is the chairman of the Burundi Independent Human Rights Commission.
We know the political dialogue has been stalling for a while, but except from that, for us, again, we consider the situation to be quite normal with regards to human rights. It does not mean that we are not seeing any violations. We still have a number of violations, but they are not like major or gross human rights violations, but still there are a number of cases.
Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, said that the opposition members are still oppressed.
Security in general is not guaranteed to each and everyone. After all, one has been witnessing corpses found here and there. So one is wondering who is responsible of this there. Beyond this, intolerance is very, very common in our country, where people from opposition are suppressed, followers of mine are arrested.
2017 marked major developments in Burundi, with the country becoming the first African country to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, citing that the court was biased and targeted only African leaders. Moses Havyarimana, Bujumbura.
A court in Cameroon has freed Patrick Nganang, a prize-winning author and Cameroon-born U.S. citizen. He was jailed for threatening the life of Cameroon President Paul Biya on social media. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Issa Chiruma, Cameroon's Minister of Communication, says the court freed Patrice Nganang on Wednesday after Cameroonian President Paul Biya ordered an end to legal proceedings against Nganang.
Mr. Nganang violated the law of our nation, threatened to kill the head of state, was detained just for investigation. But the head of state decided to stop the procedure and to let him go. They found two passports on him. One passport, Cameroonian passport, and American passport. The law of our nation does not accept the dual nationality. That reason why they withdrew his Cameroonian passport and they let him with the American passport, and he was expelled according to our own laws.
Nganang was arrested on December 6 and accused of threatening in a Facebook post to shoot Biya. He was facing a January 19 trial on charges that included seeking to justify a crime, contempt, and assault threats. On Wednesday, the author, who won the Grand Literacy Prize of Black Africa and teaches literature at New York's Stony Brook University, was taken from his cell to a Yaoundé court where the state prosecutor asked for his release. Chiruma says his Cameroonian passport was seized and Patrice was expelled with his U.S. passport.
I would like to advise him. He is an American. Let him threaten to kill the head of state of America and he will see what will happen to him.
Nganang is a fierce critic of President Biya. He was arrested in Douala, Cameroon's economic capital city, 3 weeks ago as he was boarding a flight to leave Cameroon. Nganang wrote a critical article for the weekly news magazine Jeune Afrique on Cameroon's handling of the violent secessionist movement that has paralyzed school and businesses in the English-speaking areas of the country for more than a year. The crisis started when English-speaking lawyers and teachers complained of marginalization from the French-speaking majority in the bilingual country. it escalated to violent clashes between armed separatists and the military that have left dozens dead since October. Several thousand people, including writers, had signed an online petition to pressure Biya to release the writer. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Thank you, Edwin. And from Cameroon, we go to Malawi, where the push for more female members of parliament was dealt a blow when the government said that it would not consider a proposal to create 28 automatic seats for women. Malawi ranks among the countries within the South African development community and world where women are underrepresented in government. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister Samuel Tembenu said the government removed the provision because it would be a disadvantage to women candidates in some constituencies. He said the provision would also involve a laborious and complicated legal process, including amending constitutional provisions and other electoral laws. Proponents of the provision say its removal is unfortunate. Esime Kayinja is a member of the Special Law Commission that came up with the proposal. She told reporters that the 28-seat idea was the best option among many that were intended to increase the number of women in parliament.
There were so many options. There was an issue of taking quotas at party level. There was another option of maybe just taking one constituent per district to be attached to women. That was also did not work.
She says although the proposed 28 seats might sound irrational, it gave an assurance that Malawi would achieve at least 30% of female representation in parliament, as required by SADC protocol, which the bloc adopted in 2008 with the goal of ensuring equal rights for women and an end to discrimination. Out of 193 members of Malawi's parliament, only 32 are women. Emma Galia is the national coordinator for the NGO Gender Coordination Network, which has long headed Malawi's 50-50 campaign for equal gender representation.
For the executive to remove that recommendation, now I'm beginning to doubt if Malawi is really serious about achieving gender equality and women's empowerment in the area of politics. And it is very sad that it is happening to us in this way.
Kalia says Malawi should have learned from other countries like South Africa, Mozambique, and Uganda, where similar provisions have helped increase the number of women in decision-making positions. Gender activists say they are attempting to have the provision reconsidered. Lamek Masina for VOA News.
The Somali government has retaken control of its airspace after more than two decades. Air traffic over the Horn of Africa nation had been controlled by the United Nations from the neighboring Kenya since 1992, a year after the Somali civil war broke out. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Inaugurating the aviation control center in the capital, Mogadishu, President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo said this is a sign the country is moving forward. We are here today because we have worked together, stopped fighting among ourselves. We fought division. As you know, nothing will work if there is division and people are fighting among themselves. Today we have continuity. We are building on other things and strengthening and making an effort, achieving things for the country. The president and government officials toured the newly equipped center Thursday, the day Somalia formally took control of its airspace from the International Civil Aviation Organization. The UN's aviation agency began controlling air traffic over Somalia after the country descended into civil war. Because of security concerns, the organization worked from Kenya. Somalia's Transport Minister Mohamed Abdullahi Salad told reporters the entire process of controlling the country's skies will be complete in early 2018. From today, the airspace of Somalia will be controlled from here. In the next 2 months, we'll be working with others in Nairobi. This is not an easy process like moving from one house to another. It will require some time. Some critics say Somalia is still not safe, as Al-Shabaab militants continue to carry out attacks against the internationally recognized government and civilians. Airplanes have been avoiding the southern part of the country, instead flying into the north and northeast, where there is relative peace and stability. President Farmajo urged Al-Shabaab to let the whole country have peace. To those who are against peace, Somalia is moving forward, and it's not going to stop for anyone. We are building the army, and day after day they are getting better. We are telling you to stop what you are doing, killing your people. Come back to your people so that you can take part in rebuilding the country. Government officials say they will provide training to air traffic controllers and improve security at the Mogadishu airport, where the African Union mission in Somalia, which is fighting Al-Shabaab, still has a heavy presence. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the review of some of the sports highlights of 2017 on the African continent. Jerry Udo and Deji Ogembo are both sports analysts who say African athletes did not disappoint the continent in the outgoing year.
I think one of the biggest achievement in African sport was the new CAF leadership, removing the former leadership that stayed for about 29 years before they now brought in the new leadership. I think I have to commend the new leadership of CAF. It shows that this dictatorial tendency in Africa should stop. Let me start with that one. I think that's one of the biggest positive in African football. Then the African Cup of Nations, we saw the Nations Cup, it was okay, but of course they were complaining about the facilities in Gabon, and I hope there will be improvement in the next Nations Cup, because Africa needs to really catch up with the rest of the world. We have to provide the very best when it comes to facilities. We saw the pitches in Gabon were very poor. Then there have also been other championships, like the African Basketball Championship. It was held this year. Nigeria did very well in both the male and female segment. The female team won the championship. The male team came second, which I think is a very positive one for Nigeria. So generally, African sports has not been bad.
Caster Semenya, through all the criticism, she was still able to get her hands on the 800-meter gold medal and, you know, charted territory for herself in the 1,500-meter race. She scooped the bronze medal for herself too. So for me, I think she stands out. Van Niekerk, in the 400 meters, we're expecting much from him. He had set the world record in the one-lap event last year at the Rio Olympic Games. But for me, I think Niekerk had an underwhelming season, even though he still won the gold medal in the 400 meter. But I think I expected more from the African Cup of Nations. We're in a global age where I think we should be at par with the Europeans, even the Asians.
Staying with a review of sporting events in 2017, CAF executive member and the Nigerian Football Federation president, Amaju Pinnick, has been assessing Nigeria's performance in football in 2017. The NFF president believes Nigeria's qualification for the Russia 2018 World Cup is something to be proud about.
It's been a very good year for Nigerian football.
We've not gotten to where we want to get to, but you can see that we have now built that corporate image where people now look at us with some sense of delight, some sense of responsibility, and say, yes, they are good enough to be partnered. Football can drive the economy, like as is done in other side of the divide. It can really, truly drive the economy.
Staying with football news, Federation of Uganda Football Association, FUFA, has unveiled Desabre Sebastian as the national football coach of Uganda. Desabre resigned as the coach of Egyptian Premier League table toppers Ismaili SC after guiding them against El Raja in a 5-0 win on Wednesday.
I want to improve my knowledge. I want to improve the team.
Details of his new contract remain confidential. However, he is expected to earn around $25,000 per month. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Friday, December 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great weekend, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show. Designed to keep our listeners engaged, Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.